Hey, y'all. Good morning. Happy Monday to you.
Glad you could make it.
Welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brewers Show. We've been wide open all morning. Got a lot of cool articles for you guys. Hope you guys had a great weekend. It'll be a fantastic Monday. Be sure to check out a lot of the different specials we have running around right now, including the zinc glycinate formula. And also, too, one of my all-time favorites that I run on a regular basis, the healthy morning stack with the Fit Food. Where is it at here? The Fit Food and the Purple Stick. That's what I was just making up earlier here. This is one of those kits that I put together on a whim, and I didn't even really realize it was something that I did all the time. Just when I'm hungry or after eggs, Fit Food Shake, Purple Stick. And then I realized everybody started trying it and said, wow, why don't you have that as a kit? And I said, well, that can do that in about 30 minutes. Stand by. So I hope you guys are enjoying that. The Fit Food and the Purple Stick on sale. And then remember, too, we also have the kit we put together that everybody's been liking, the Brain, Say No to Brain Food, Brain and Body Restart Kit. Say No to Brain Fog. My Purple Stick got kicked in yet.
Brain Fog is more
awesome.
Yeah,
I know. I need a Purple Stick.
I got a kit for you, buddy.
I'm about to take it. And it includes one of the free shakers we have with the GHI Cleanse and the Magnesium Brain Food. So be sure to check that out. And also, too, the latest updates on the podcast. Check them out here at browershow.com. Got a lot of cool stuff going on these. And also, be sure to sign up for the weekly newsletter updates, including the Brewer Show and the Health Masters articles right there. So we'll send both of them to you every single day, right to your email. So be sure to stay up to date on those. And you had an article you were talking about earlier, kind of a first thing Monday funny show before we get into some serious stuff.
Well, I had never heard of Sydney Sweeney.
Okay.
And apparently she's some jeans model.
Yeah, she's a motorhead, too.
Yeah, she restored a Ford Bronco. Said about it, this last month, she was featured in an American Eagle ad campaign called Sydney Sweeney Has Great Jeans, J-E-A-N-S. The campaign, which makes pun on the homophones of jeans and jeans, G-E-N-E-S, was criticized by some social media users as a dog whistle for racist and eugenic ideology. I guess because she's probably some kind of, they thought she's some kind of neo-Nazi skinhead grandma killer or whatever, because she must have some kind of German in her, as well as catering to the male gaze. All of the advertisements were not political. The campaign drew the attention of the Trump administration and some conservative commentators who claimed that Sydney and American Eagle were targeted as part of a broader woke backlash, criticizing the ad campaign, which were already described as an exaggeration by various news agencies. And they also said that she was a registered Republican. And so they were mad at her. And apparently Target now, it says woke Gestapo Target, registered Republican Sydney Sweeney for thought crimes.
Yeah.
I'm going to read you this.
This is
funny. The woke Gestapo and the far left entertainment media are targeting, not the store Target, but targeting Sydney Sweeney for career blacklisting. They're a blacklister now.
They'll never get away with this.
It says, so far, Sweeney's committed two cardinal sins. The first is daring to be sexy and appealing in an American Eagle blue jeans ad. You see, Sweeney had the temerity to be normal, beautiful, not fat, not trans, not tattooed, but beautiful. That's what it says. I got to say that.
Oh, no. And she did the ultimate cardinal sin. She dared to be white.
Oh, my God. She's a white woman.
And she's not fat. She's not a tranny.
That's it.
She's done.
She had the audacity to be normal, beautiful, not fat, not trans, not tattooed, and beautiful. After the 5 years of normal people being grossed out by an exclusive beauty standard of body positivity, which is nothing more than an affirmative action program that allows ugly people to appear in swimsuit editions
and
underwear
obese
ads, massively obese, so Sweeney dared to be sensual and appealing, an all-American selfie campaign that was even included in her own Ford Mustang. The campaign was a massive success,
duh.
A hot blonde gets on a blue jean commercial. I mean, heaven forbid that.
Sports car.
Yeah. The campaign was a massive success, duh. The blue jeans sold out, duh. And then the left did what they always do in the face of normal succeeding. They freaked out and screamed, Nazi! So it wasn't just nobodies on TikTok melting down. Disney staffers at ESPN declared the ad fascist. MSNBC said it was fair to attack the ads as Nazi propaganda.
God.
American Eagle, to its great credit, appears to understand that social media is not real life.
Yeah,
obviously, the ad is rousing success. Obviously, normal people appreciate this return to normalcy. And obviously, through this ad, American Eagle has earned the goodwill of a vast majority of people who long ago tried who's tired of staring at fat women in bikinis. So American Eagle, I'm reading what it says. Don't fuss at me. So American Eagle has already told the woke Gestapo to basically to, well, they said something ugly here. I'm not going to say it. But the woke Gestapo isn't used to losing, especially when it uses the word Nazi. In the past, companies have always caved. They cannot stand. The woke Gestapo never surrenders. So now they are targeting the girl, a 27-year-old rising star who did nothing wrong other than prove that America is ready for a return to normal America where attractive people sell the stuff. Yet so the woke Gestapo doxed this poor woman to destroy her career. They went digging and apparently discovered, oh, my God, here it comes, that she's a registered Republican.
There you go.
Whoa.
Yeah, I gotta laugh at this though, because you've seen this with these people on the left. They absolutely have to try to manufacture problems. So they do is they always got their deck of cards, their offended cards. They got their 52 deck card, and they go, 52 card deck. They go, oh, this is my offended. Hold on a second. There's a girl that's pretty in jeans. Get the deck of cards. All right. Nazi. We got the Nazi card. We're playing the Nazi card. Done. Game over. Uno. I'm finished. Nazi. So because she has nice jeans, J-E-N-A-S. I'll give American Eagle credit. They didn't pander this. They said, listen, guys, the ad campaign is and always was about jeans. We sell jeans. Her jeans. Her story. We'll continue to celebrate how people wear American Eagle jeans with confidence their way. Great jeans look good on everyone.
Goes on.
Goodbye.
Goes on. The fact that this is news.
Yeah,
that's
true.
We're starting the show with it. Tells you everything you know about the fascist scum in Hollywood. In a sane, tolerant, and decent Hollywood, the idea that a woman who lives in Florida is registered one of only two America's major political parties would not be news. Good grief. But you see, Sini was already suspect over questionable associations, meaning her family, that is this, a registered Republican. No. She must answer for this. Listen, I'm not one for giving successful people advice. If Sweeney asked me for guidance, I'm not wanting to do her any harm. I suggest that she call somebody else. The one thing I would tell her, though, is not to cave in, not to give in.
Yep.
That's what Hollywood's new McCarthy's want, because they know if she grovels, that will be the end of her.
Yep.
They will never forgive her for being one of those. And if she caves like a gerbil, she'll lose support from normal people. Then she's got nothing.
She has no base. This is something I've always told so many people, is never apologize for your convictions. There's going to be people that are going to be offended about anything and everything you do. It doesn't matter what you do. I learned this a long time ago, and Dad taught me this. About 25% of people are always going to hate you no matter what you do. Whether you grovel to them, whether you pander to them, whether you cater to them, they're always going to be mad at you for something. They're not going to like the way you looked. They're not going to like the way you dressed. They're not going to like the things you said. They're always going to be pissed off about something. There's no point in ever apologizing for something you're convicted about or doing nothing at all. Because when you do that, you show extreme weakness. Now, if you come out and you do something unbelievably egregious, you do something really, really stupid, then, okay, take a step back. You may need to issue a statement. She didn't do anything. This is the left, again, trying to manufacture more problems. And, of course, they never miss an opportunity to pull the imaginary neo-Nazi race card. That is a standard for them. That will be a standard for them, because even after this, even after World War II has been long gone and there's not a single Nazi that exists, they'll always pull that card.
Well, and the reason for that is most of Holland or most of media is Jewish control.
That's exactly right.
I mean, we can pretend like it's not that way. That's just a fact. I mean, we can say, oh, hey, true, you're being a Nazi. Oh, now I'm being a Nazi because I say the media is Jewish controlled. It is. They brag about it. And so
all the time.
So that's why they're so happy to bring out the Nazi card, because that was their great assault on them, was from the Nazis. That's all 100 years ago now, but they want to make sure they keep that alive as long as they possibly can, and they have to dust off the Nazi label all the time.
Yeah.
But it's crazy to me when you see this kind of stuff, because it's just nonsense. So back to what Austin was saying about there. If you have 100 people in a room, 25% of them are going to love you no matter what you do.
Yep.
25% are going to love you, and if you get them mad enough, they won't love you anymore. 25% are going to hate you, and if you're nice enough to them, they may start liking you. And 25% are going to hate you no matter what you do. So you
never pander that 25%.
You cater to the top 25%. They're going to love you no matter what you do. Because they're always going to – that's where you guys come in. That's where the 3% of the people that support this show come in. It's from that 25% that love us no matter what we do. So, you know, like last week, you know, I told you guys, we were joking. We said, well, we're offending everybody on today's show. If we haven't offended you yet, take a number. We'll get to you, right? And so we're because we don't play the game. Like this morning, we're going to have all kinds of people mad at us because some beautiful blonde gets in a pair of jeans, makes a bunch of money doing an ad. The company makes a bunch of money selling the jeans.
It's American Eagle. It's the brand American Eagle. And so they have to go in and they have to risk. American Eagle doesn't ad with a white girl that basically is not fat or tranny. Now, this is an article I really wanted to address because there's still numerous problems that I get contacted on a regular basis. And I personally know a lot of people with this issue. And now the FDA, almost 25 years after the opioid pandemic, the opioid epidemic started, specifically a lot of it tying back into the Sackler family with Purdue and OxyContin. The FDA is now mandating major label changes on all opioid pain medication, including putting it on the prescription bottle as well. Never understood why this was never addressed. They said stricter label requirements are being restored. Drug labels must now show clear risk of information describing the summary of study resulting showing estimated risk of addiction, overdose, and misuse. They're also having to show that essentially data is showing risk of misuse, addiction, fatal and non-fatal overdoses for patients who use opioids. And this is crazy here. The label must have stronger dosage warnings that higher doses come with greater risk. Duh, and that pharma companies are required to remove any language that could be misinterpreted as being supportive of long-term opioid use. This goes back to what I watched, and I saw this a lot in college, is people were getting prescribed, and I knew athletes that were doing this, they were getting prescribed OxyContin in college for a knee injury, for an ankle injury. I never told you about this, but it just happened a lot even at college I was at. And they were getting this stuff, and I remember even hearing about it. The doctors were saying, hey, it's okay. You busted your knee. You tore your ACL. We got you on OxyContin. It's not addictive. It's controlled release, so you can run these for the next month or so till you recover, and you can still exercise and rehab, and you're not going to have any pain issues. OxyContin was the most addictive prescription opioid that ever existed. They take a 20 or 40 or 60 or 80 milligrams of oxycodone. They put in a controlled release tablet so it would break down and release over an 8-hour period. So you had continual opioid spikes all throughout the day, not just a singular spike from taking like a morphine or a tablet that breaks down in 30 minutes. So the half-life of the opioid in your system took forever to clear, making it unbelievably addictive. The most addictive opioid that was prescribed ever in existence, and we saw them say it's not addictive, it's safe to take every day, there's no misuse problems to it, and a lot of people got hooked on that stuff over the years, ended up having to go into methadone clinics. I did one of my clinical trials. I went to methadone clinic as a student and studied, actually talked to people and did an entire project on methadone clinics. So I've seen this firsthand. I've seen the problem with it. It's wild to me that the FDA is finally now, 25 years after this, finally saying maybe we need to start warning people about this on the boxes and on the labels now.
You know, a lot of times methadone can be very, very beneficial as far as getting off of opiates.
Oh, it can.
But the problem is methadone has a longer half-life than opiates do.
Yes.
And a lot of people come off the opiates and get on the methadone.
They
can't get rid of the methadone.
Yeah.
They stay on it for years.
Yeah.
And you know, the sad part about it, I know years ago I had a back injury, and they put me on I guess it was a morphine. I forgot what it was called. Dilaudin or something. I forgot.
Dilaudin. Dilaudin's usually the brand name for them.
You know, and I took it like one or two a day for two or three days, and my back was feeling better. And all of a sudden I thought, well, I need to take another one of those. I thought, wait a minute, my back doesn't hurt.
There you go.
The fourth day. And I said, I'm not doing this. This is not okay with me. I'm not going to do this. So I stopped. And I said, this stuff is addictive as crap. I never had it. I had never had a drug do that to me before.
Yeah. It was usually within the 3 to 4 day mark, it starts. Unless you're still having severe pain.
Well, no, the pain has subsided enough that I can handle the pain because I'm pretty pain tolerant anyhow.
Yeah.
But I remember years ago, I met this lady and she was divorced and her husband and her had one of those clinics set up.
Yeah.
In which they had a doctor, because this is back when it was legal to do this.
Oh, yeah.
They had a doctor writing prescriptions for OxyContin, you know, at this clinic, and they literally had people lined up around the building for this. But it was legal in the United States. Well, suddenly they said it's not legal anymore.
Yeah.
So they ended up setting up this sting on them, and they found out about it. And I had nothing to do with any of this long before that I was around, with, you know, as far as talking to her. And they ended up fleeing because she was a Russian citizen. They fled to Russia.
Of course they did. Well, they were pill mills. They were all over the country.
But it
was a gray area is what it was.
Well, that's right.
It was a gray area that everybody started exploiting. The FDA knew it was happening, and the FDA didn't even get involved or require the stuff to actually have the label changed on it.
Well, and then what happened is they, after 2 or 3 years, you know, they wanted to close the case, and so they allowed him to come back, and she was charged as a felon, but she wasn't put in, given any jail time, and her husband ended up going to, like, a minimum security facility, kind of like Ghislaine Maxwell is in now in Texas, and, you know, they moved her from the Florida Federal Correctional Facility.
Yep,
and so now I guess she decided she gave the right answers. And so so what happened is they came back to the United States. They ended up getting divorced over all of this stuff. But they said, she told me, she goes, when we were doing it, you know, we were like operating in an area that really wasn't regulated. It was like gray area,
it was,
like you mentioned. And she goes, and they just dropped the hammer on us. And I mean, they basically ruined their lives.
Well, and it happens too.
But look at all the lives they ruined by operating in that area. But all the OxyContin out.
And what happened was, and I did a lot of research with this back in the 06, 07, 08 when I was in college. And what happened was there were multiple people in different throes of the government, in different agencies, that this started to affect their family. This is why it got flagged. So you started having, you know, daughters of FDA officials. So I'm not dropping by his name, but stuff like that. And all of a sudden they're like, wait a minute. Why are our kids getting prescribed opioids on a regular basis because they have a back injury, a knee injury, a football injury? And so what happened was a lot of these bureaucrats got in there and they said, what is going on with this? Why isn't it being addressed? Why is OxyContin being prescribed to all these people and telling them it's not addictive at all? And that's really what opened up the case, because quite frankly, the FDA originally was completely complicit in this. It doesn't take anybody that doesn't, I mean, it doesn't take an individual that's super educated in medical field to understand opioids are at least mildly addictive. In some cases, get really addictive the more you take them. When you say we had a controlled release drug that's been clinically tested, you look at it, they knew it was addictive. You can't look at OxyContin.
That's why Purdue Pharma got fined billions
of
dollars.
That's right, they got because they lied about
$100 billion.
They lied about a lot of it when they got it rolling. But the thing was, you want to pretend like the FDA didn't know this stuff had any issues with it, and so that was a whole problem. And then now it switched over to the fentanyl. This stuff's on a whole other level.
100 times more dangerous.
It's topical. All the guys I know in law enforcement, now they double glove up when they search people.
This is why we left Afghanistan, because we no longer needed opiates.
Exactly right. Yeah,
I've done entire shows on this, by the way, talking about what happened with Operation Gladio and Operation Condor, and you know, and what happened with the Vatican being involved with the mafia and the CIA and everything else. And it's a very big fact.
At the same time, this stuff basically started to hit the market. We went into Afghanistan. By the time we started to get all the poppy growing again in Afghanistan, this is when also the FDA put the hammer down and started busting everybody for these pill mills.
Exactly.
What happened was everybody had was on OxyContin for years, so we said, I can't get Oxys. Well, then heroin became just readily available to everyone in the United States at that point, because so much was flooding in. And Afghanistan, about 06, 07, 08 when it started really bad with heroin here in Florida. I remember reading about that.
And I remember a family member's brother, I'm not going to go into detail with this, died of a heroin overdose probably about 10 years ago.
Orlando.
Now, over in Orlando. And they told us it was Heroin Highway, Colonial Drive. And they said that the stuff that was coming in now was so pure that a lot of the people that have been longtime addicts of heroin didn't realize it had not been cut.
Yeah, they weren't cut straight. At all. There was so much coming in.
And a lot of people were overdosing now. And so a lot of people had problems with that, and they started dying from it. And then now, of course, fentanyl's even worse. You know,
fentanyl's topical, bro. That's the scary part. I feel like all law enforcement, there's been multiple cases I've read about where guys are essentially like they're patting them down. That's why they start wearing gloves now. All of a sudden, they grab a piece of paper, a dollar bill out of their pocket. Powder falls everywhere, and they're like, crap. All of a sudden, you get real dizzy, you pass out. Then they're having to give Narcan to doggone officers because they're getting fentanyl overdose on traffic stops.
By the way, Barron Trump, if this is Barron Trump's news, I don't know if it is or not. I don't know. It says fan accounts. It may not even be him. It says, boom, the great reclamation, but it's a good article. Supreme Court unleashes Trump to purge the deep state. Now, this is a lot of hyperbole here, because Trump is not going to try to purge the deep state. No way. He is part of that. The Supreme Court just handed Trump the nuclear key, the authority to fire entrenched deep state agents embedded across federal agencies. For the first time in 90 years, the president can dismantle the bureaucratic dictatorship that has hijacked our republic. For 90 years, the president was in prison, was a prisoner. Since 1935, unelected operatives hid inside the independent agencies like the FTC, SEC, CPSC. These ideological soldiers wrote regulations and laws through the Chevron Doctrine, enforced them like tyrants, and they couldn't be fired, not even by the president, until now. The court swings the hammer. Trump takes the sword. In a 6-3 ruling, which happened a few weeks ago, Supreme Court confirmed President Trump's power to remove Mary Boyle, Richard Trumka, and Alexander Hohen, Sarek, from the CPSC, shattering the legal shield created by the New Deal's corrupt legacy. This isn't just a ruling. It's a strike against the deep state fortress. It cracks the entire foundation of Humphrey's executor, the case that led federal commissions rules without accountability. Crump can now purge federal leftist agencies of leftist loyalists, communists, terminate obstructive commissioners, seize control of the energy, labor, secretary, and commerce and finance, reclaim. He, in fact, he just fired his CPA that was running the numbers as far as unemployment figures. The silent coup is being reversed. Now, what's interesting about this is when I looked this up, because I'd really be honest with you, I'd never really gone into detail on this thing with Humphrey. And, you know, as Humphrey's, what is Humphrey's executor is to look at the 90-year-old Supreme Court decision Trump is targeting. A month into President Trump's second term, lawyers for the Republican administration seem intent on provoking a legal fight to overturn a 90-year-old Supreme Court decision known as Humphrey's executor. That has been critical to the development of the modern U.S. government.
Yep.
This ushered in an era of powerful, independent federal agencies operating under the Chevron doctrine, charged with regulating labor, employment, and the airways, and much less, and much more. The unanimous 1935 Supreme Court ruling established that presidents cannot fire, here we go, appointed leaders of the alphabet soup agencies without cause.
Yep. That's how the EPA got out of control, yep. ATF got out of control, all of them.
But this decision was long rankled. Conservative legal theorists argue the Constitution invests immense power in the president. They rejected limits imposed by Congress and upheld by the courts. They say that modern administration state gets the Constitution all wrong and that all federal agencies are part of the executive branch answer to the president. And that includes his ability to fire their leaders at will. The current Supreme Court will, with a conservative majority, it includes three justices nominated from, has times agreed. Now, I'm going to go ahead and put the rest of this in here. It was basically about William Humphrey became a Republican member of Congress from Washington State. He was appointed to the Federal Trade Commission by President Calvin Coolidge and reappointed by President Herbert Hoover, both Republicans. A few months after taking office in 1933, Democratic Representative Franklin Delano Roosevelt sought Humphrey's resignation, preferring his own choice of the agency. He would have had a lot to say about the New Deal. When Humphrey refused, Roosevelt fired him anyhow. Despite the provisional law allowing the president to remove a commissioner only for inefficiency, neglect of duty, or malfeasance in office. After Humphrey died the next year, the person charged with administering his estate, Humphrey's executor, sued for back pay. The justices ruled unanimously that the law establishing the FTC was constitutional and that FDR's action was improper. For it's quite evident that one who holds the office only during the pleasure of another cannot be depended upon to maintain an attitude of independence against the latter's will, their opinion read. So in other words, it said that once you put somebody to a position of power, or if they're in that position of power, when you take office, you may not get rid of them, period. Yeah. No matter how communist, no matter how red, no matter how incompetent they are, you have to put up with it. And that's the deep state power that they had when the communists got in and got into these positions of power, which could not be fired. And then they put in the Chevron doctrine. Now here, let me say one other thing too about this. The biggest problem that we have with all of this is Congress. Congress then defers back to the Chevron doctrine, yep. And to this. In fact, I talked to John Parvin about this morning. Congress then refers back to the fact that, hey, we can't control this. This is part of Humphrey's executor. We can't get rid of these people. We can't pass laws against this. And so all of a sudden, they figure out we've got all this power now, the people who are in these agencies, and they start passing all of these laws instead of Congress passing the laws and start saying, we've got the Chevron doctrine. We're going to do this now, and no matter what you do, we're going to force you to listen to us because we're the experts in this field, and it doesn't have to be by vote because we're going to rule you by legislation authority because we're going to pass all of this stuff. So Congress stepped back now for 45 terms, Austin, for 90 years, yeah. And it's allowed this to happen. And refuse to take their own authority. And then you put a whole bunch of dual citizens from other countries in Congress who push certain narratives and certain problems, then you end up with a huge mess all of the time. And see, and that's what we have. That's why you get this bureaucratic group of people that are running the United States that cannot be fired, regulated, reined in, or anything done to them. And that's why when you watch every single time for the last 90 years, whenever there's a problem, it always goes off to the next administration, the next administration, the next administration, and it never seems to end.
Because no, they can't do anything about it.
Where they can't fire anybody.
No, they can't fire anybody. And that's what it talks about here. This is why the Supreme Court finally overruled the Chevron doctrine. It's because essentially what it did was, if there was a statute that was unclear or ambiguous, that nobody could really figure out 100%, they just went back, and the courts were required to defer back to the agencies. And what they do, the agencies started coming up with their own conclusions. And they said, well, Congress enacted this statute. We're going off. And what they did is they started pushing the goalposts further and further and further and stretching out longer and longer. That's how ATF got away with so much crap that they did over the last 30, 40 years. Actually, I'm almost right at 40 years now, because Chevron doctrine was from 1984. The ATF would come in and say, by the way, we're ruling that a pistol brace is now an SBR. Like, they did this crap. And I watched person after person, a lot of my associates went, now went, and they registered their pistols with braces as SBRs. They got a free tax stamp. How'd that work out for you now? Now that you registered your pistol, now it's registered with ATF because you were scared to stand your ground on it. I thought that was very interesting for a lot of people. And so what's crazy about this is that nobody was able to come back in and really call these agencies out. That's one of the reasons why the Chevron doctrine was so important in getting thrown out. We're watching right now down here. This is one of the most bizarre things I've ever watched in the state of Florida. We had legislators pass this statute called the super speeder law last month. It went into place July 1st. It's, you know, if somebody's doing 50 miles an hour over the speed limit, your vehicle's automatically impounded. It's 30-day jail time, this gigantic fine, and. Well, if you're doing 100 on the interstate or any point, which is 30 over, the same thing applies. Well, then what's happened is now multiple people that I know, individuals also talk to law enforcement. Everybody goes, well, what if you're just doing 30 over? Because quite frankly, if you guys have been in the state of Florida, the interstate and the highway patrol and the speed limit is kind of suggested in some areas. I mean, you go down to Miami, the speed limit is 70. You won't find somebody in the interstate doing 70. I mean, people pass you doing 110, 120 the whole time, and state troopers don't even pull people down there sometimes. Well, now we talk to law enforcement, and they're saying, well, now we're going to arrest people doing 30 over. I've talked to law enforcement. They said, if you do it 30 over, automatically taking you to jail and impounding you. I said, that's not what the statute says. Well, that's how everybody's interpreting it. Well, state of Florida hasn't even clarified this yet. Now there's ambiguous law. So now law enforcement is just interpreting these statutes how they see fit so they can start arresting more people and making more excuses to impound more vehicles. Which, by the way, in the state of Florida, after a vehicle, I think, has been impounded for like 60 days, they have the ability to auction it off.
Sell it, make money
on it, or seize it.
Our asset forfeiture.
Asset forfeiture in the state of Florida. A lot of people don't know about that if your vehicle's been seized. Well, here's the problem. If your vehicle gets impounded for speeding, it's like $250 fee right out the gate. Then you have another like $150 day compounding fee on top of fees every day it's an impound. Well, if you go to jail for 30 days because you were doing 71 and a, you know, 76 and a 45, okay, you're going way too fast. But okay, now your vehicle's impounded. Now, by the way, you just finance, so you owe money on it still, so you can't get a clear title. Well, then they come in and say, oh, by the way, you want your vehicle back after 30 days. You owe us another, you know, $6,000-$7,000 to get that impound. Well, I don't have that kind of cash right now. Well, okay, well, you got another 30 days to get out of impound. Well, 30 days, now you owe $20,000 on the vehicle. Well, now all of a sudden you go, well, I still owe $25,000, $30,000 on the car. The car's only worth about that. Now I got to come up with $20,000 cash to get the vehicle out. Florida goes, oh, by the way, we're auctioning the car now. Okay, well, I owe money on it. That's not our problem. They're not required to pay off the lender. They're not required to pay off the first lien holder. They seize the vehicle, sell the vehicle, collect the money on the vehicle, and you are still responsible for paying off the note on the vehicle. Watched it happen with people with motorcycles before they got seized back in the day when they were speeding too fast. So this entire thing that they did, and now allowing law enforcement to interpret it any way they want to start arresting people, is completely and totally out of control and falls right back in what you talked about.
Well, let me tell you a funny story. Yesterday, I'm driving over to get a bowl of chili.
We like chili. It's a little hot for chili right now.
Well, no, I get in the car, and all of a sudden, there's a lizard on the hood.
A lot of Florida.
And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder how long he can hang on. Now, if all of you lizard enthusiasts who love lizards, don't judge me for this. We have lizards everywhere.
Dude, it's and open so, season.
I'm driving. The speed looks like 45, right? And I speed up. I say, let's see if he can hang on. And he hung on. I thought, there's a tenacious little lizard. So I got on a back road over there on old Lake Alfred Road. And speed looks like 50 miles an hour. I thought, well, punch the car, and I'll see if I get the lizard to fly off. And I thought to myself, wait a minute. If I go more than 30 miles an hour over on this back road with nobody else on it but me, I could go to jail.
Already, yeah.
Because I've got a lizard on the hood. I'm playing a game here. Finally, he fell off at around 60.
Did he?
Yeah, blew
off. Pretty resilient.
Yeah, I'm sure he just
bounced.
Well, I don't know. He floated off gently into the grass and then ended on a plant and has a life of leisure now, full of you lizard enthusiasts. And what was funny is I actually thought about that.
Yeah.
If I go more than 30 miles an hour over the speed limit on this back road with nobody else back here, when I punch the car for a second, I could get arrested and have my car impounded. I said, this is awful. I feel like I'm in a fascist dictator state here. All because what? Congress did not, in the state of Florida, did not do proper legislation
on this. No, didn't word it properly. They, in my opinion, they intentionally, and again, this is my opinion, they intentionally left this ambiguous for this exact reason now. So now law enforcement has the ability to say, well, super speeder's 50 over. Well, no, it's interpreted at 30 over now. So now law, and here's the problem. So you do all this stuff, say it happens, and then say they turn around and they clarify it. We still went to jail. You still got to have an attorney. You still got to deal with the record. You still got a vehicle impounded. And all of a sudden they go, whoops, sorry, not our problem. You know, you're on a back road at 1 in the morning coming back from work with nobody on it, and you're doing, you know, 80 and a 50. You went to jail. Not our problem. Florida's known for speeding. So.
Well, no. Oh, and the stupid part about all of this stuff, a lot of these legislators, they're pencil necks.
They are.
I'm sorry, they're pencil necks.
They're pansies.
He didn't say that. He said pansies.
They really are.
He
most did.
He said pansies. We're good. And so the problem is that they don't speed anyhow.
No. Well, I have chauffeurs.
Yeah. They don't really. They just drive around in their little luxury cars.
They get paid security to move around.
They have little Teslas they plug in. You know, they don't care if the lizard's on the hood. They could care less. They don't even see the hood. They're hiding in the back of the car. And so they can pass a law like that that'll never ever affect them.
Correct.
It won't be until their kids start getting arrested.
Yeah.
For trying to shake a lizard off the hood. Okay. That they're going to say, hey, maybe we need to look at this. Because I understand if there's a super speeder law and you're at a 40 mile an hour zone and you're doing 90.
Yeah.
All right. Whatever. Okay. That's pretty quick.
That's too fast for conditions.
Yeah. All right. You know, whatever. Okay. Just you don't do that. But if you're in a 40 and you're doing 71 and now you're going to jail and you have a court record, that's just kind of a bit much. It's way more than it needs to be. And see, that's the problem with legislation, isn't it? These bureaucrats will pass laws without ever asking us.
Well, and here's
that's why it needs to be constitutional referendum on this.
Yes, it should have been on the ballot.
Yeah.
It should have been on the ballot. If they would have put this on the Florida ballot, we'd have had enough morons in Florida that would have voted for it, which I don't think we would have. I would have been like, all right, well, it got voted on. The issue is this. I've been over to Europe multiple times. I've been on the Autobahn, which has no speed limit in numerous parts of it. There's less accidents on the Autobahn than there are in Interstate 4 in Florida.
That's true.
Interstate 4 is a nightmare, and the speed limit is 70. It's not the speeding that causes the problem. It's the absolute morons that sit in the left lane doing 60 miles an hour to 70, and everybody has to continue to try to pass them to keep the flow of traffic. Then people, I've watched it. People change lanes trying to pass by somebody. Bam, they hit each other. Then they veer off, they hit somebody else. Almost all the time and variable on Interstate 4, majority of the accidents are not from super speeders. A lot of these super speeders that they're arresting, everyone I've seen, it's like 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning.
And the thing, like in the Autobahn,
nobody on the road.
On the Autobahn, you cannot pass on the right.
Exactly right.
Now, but I will say this. I had it happen to me on the Autobahn. Yeah, I've been on the Autobahn. First of all, I was on the Autobahn. I was 21 years old. I'm driving an Opel Kadett, right?
Yeah.
This is a great story. And I was over there with my dad. He had left me there. I borrowed one of the neighbors, one of our relatives' cars. And I'm on a huge curve on the Autobahn in southern Germany. And all of a sudden, I see somebody flash behind me.
Yeah.
It's called Upbremsen in German. And they flashed me. And I thought, huh. So I'm in the right-hand lane with the – this is a little car. I had
left
a Opel.
Lane.
Yeah, I was in the right-hand lane.
Okay.
And I was driving like 70 miles an hour, top speed on this car.
Yeah.
It was like shaking at 70, right? The tires about the size of, you know, a bicycle. And all of a sudden, this guy came around me in a 911 Turbo. Air-cooled.
That's one of the first phase of them.
Came around about 170 miles an hour, about pulled the paint off the side of that Opel. And I thought to myself, that is so cool. Not like that kind of stuff, okay? Because it was legal. He wasn't breaking the law.
No.
Okay? That's Germany. So what they do, they pass the law that you can't pass on the right ever.
Yeah.
So you have to, if somebody's in a left-hand lane and they're not doing the speed limit, you cannot go around them on the right. You will get a massive ticket because they want to stop that switching lane.
I've watched so many accidents happen like that.
Now, I have had one time I had one of those guys over there, got in the left-hand lane. He was going way under the speed limit. And I did. I went around him in the middle lane.
Did you finally?
Oh, boy, he's slipping me off, screaming and yelling and cussing at me because he was another one of those Gestapo police people. You know, I'm going to show you that you can't pass me.
Well, when you look at the basics, especially.
But I did not get a ticket.
Right. When you go back to the concept of high speed on the road and traffic flow, if you have a lane that's for higher speed and it's usually to the left, which is with the interstate, it's designed to work perfectly where people are slower to the middle and people are slower to the right. When you have a concept like that, it actually works really good with high flow traffic. You get individuals that want to go fast in a hurry. You get people that are going moderate speed limit in the middle, and you get people that are really slow and want to drive like turds on the right. That concept works amazingly well. The problem with it is they allow everybody now to sit in the left lane, do a 10 under the speed limit. It's my right to 60.
Or they're doing the speed limit.
Yeah, even most of the time they're not. A lot of times they don't want to do that anymore now. You go, middle lane's doing 60, left lane's doing 60, right lane's doing 60, and they're on a full roadblock. That's my favorite in Florida. And they're all Priuses.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Not joking. I've seen it. And then they go on Facebook and they joke
about it. They brag about it.
And they brag about it, tell about how they did this.
How much gas they saved for everybody. They're going slower.
If that's you, you probably not listen to the show. So I'm
Yeah, well, yeah, I listen to the show. Yeah. Oh, by the way, MAGA infighting continues as Laura Loomer, who I actually don't like, blasts Tucker Carlson as a fraud and a terrible person in her latest rant. Laura Loomer, she's one of those people that has a really big mouth, and she says all kinds of crazy stuff that's stupid. Far-right activist Laura Loomer, she does, has launched a blistering public attack on Tucker Carlson. Now, why? This is why it just irritates me. Accusing the former Fox News host of being a terrible person and a fraud. That's pretty strong words.
Yeah.
In a fiery post. Okay. Now, you know, this comes as MAGA's infighting continues, stemming largely from the Epstein files. Loomer's comment came in direct response to an article in The Independent, which Carlson was quoted in likening Loomer to a child wielding a loaded firearm. I'm so glad so many people are starting to see what a terrible person Tucker Carlson is, Loomer wrote. I'm glad people's eyes are opening to what a fraud this guy is. That's a strong statement. Because I haven't said that Laura Loomer's a fraud. I'm not going to say that. It's not true. She really says what she believes in most cases, and so does Tucker Carlson.
But she just says some stupid stuff.
Yeah, I don't agree with her. That's right. But what she said, that goes on to say that the main reason, the animosity between the two has long been building, fueled in part by, listen, disagreements over foreign policy and Donald Trump's positions on Israel and Iran.
There you go.
Loomer has positioned herself as a staunch defender of Trump's pro-Israel stance, while Carlson has become increasingly critical of the U.S. support of Israel for military action in Gaza in recent months. Loomer, who was banned on social media platforms in the past, has rebuilt her audience on X, has cultivated an image as a relentless enforcer of loyalty to Trump. She has publicly boasted of influencing personal decisions in Trump's orbit and has threatened to expose conservative influencers she sees as insufficiently loyal to the former president. Now, they also come after Candace Owens.
Of course they do.
You know, Candace Owens had a video. I should have played it this morning. I didn't have a chance to send it to Austin about how Israel's a satanic state. I sent it to you yesterday. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty intense. And I thought to myself, wow. And see, here's the problem. When you start to realize that we have dual Israeli citizens in Congress that are basically influencing the decisions in this country and that they're influencing us in a way that they shouldn't be doing that, period.
Correct.
Then you start to realize that a lot of legislation gets passed because of that and the hundreds of millions of dollars a year, if not billions of dollars a year, that are sent to Israel against...
It's billions.
It's billions. What is it, $87 million a day or whatever it is. You start to realize that this isn't okay. And so the problem with all of this stuff, so when you're Tucker Carlson, you come out, you say, hey, maybe that's not okay. It's nothing to do with Israel. He got a standing ovation for talking about this the other day in Tampa.
Well, there's two things apparently you can't talk about now. The first one is basically the genocide in Palestine. And the second one you can't talk about is why in the world won't the Epstein files get released?
Well, and
those are two things you can't touch now, apparently.
Well, but, you know, but then this same communist mafiosa group comes in and says, oh, she can't be wearing those jeans because she's a hot blonde.
Yeah. Because
those are opening story.
Why that's Nazis?
Yeah, I mean, so, I know the whole thing gets all. And so, but the problem is for these people, the world is waking up, and the biggest problem: the same group of people that are basically the Sabbatean Kabbalist Luciferian synagogue of Satan have come in now and destroyed the American church to a large degree, as far as from a traditional standpoint. And because the traditional standpoint of the American church for the past 100 years has been pro-Zionism. Because of the Scofield Reference Bible, they're losing that influence in a lot of the churches now. Because people don't take their kids to church anymore. And so it's interesting how communism always self-liquidates.
It does.
Sooner or later, everybody else becomes...
It's not sustainable.
No, because nobody wants to work, and everybody wants to criticize everybody who does work.
It's true, and nobody works. And everybody goes, well, why aren't you working? Well, I'm not working because I'm communist. Why aren't you working? And everybody goes... Well, who's going to work?
Well, I read an article one time where this professor at a major university had decided that everybody in the classroom got a B.
Yeah.
You got to be no matter what you did.
No matter what you did.
It didn't matter if you got an F, a zero. If you came to class, nothing mattered. And if it didn't matter if you got 100 on every exam,
you got a B.
You got a B.
Remember this.
And then pretty soon, everybody just stopped coming to class.
By the end of the semester, there was nobody in class.
Because,
nobody even showed
because
up.
Nobody cared. Because no matter what they did, they could only get a B. And no matter what they didn't do, they would get a B.
Well, I remember there was a class in when I was at university down there, Southeastern. I remember there was a class, and one of the professors was known for being, like, really easy. And that everybody kind of had – it wasn't that bad. But one of the mentalities everybody kind of knew is, as long as you showed up – he wasn't really strict about attendance. So as long as you showed up and you made good grades on the test – he didn't really care. What happened was exactly that. Everybody kind of knew what to study. Everybody kind of knew the template. If everybody was at least like self-motivated, you could pretty much go through the book, skip class majority of the time. I think I still got an A in the class. But the thing is, when you went to class, there'd only be like 5 or 10 kids in the class.
Well, that's I know another professor over there. Every answer on every test was B as a boy.
Yeah.
It was always B.
Always B.
50 answer questions, 50 it was B. If it's false, true or false, it's all false.
Well, then sometimes some of the professors, they'll use the same exact exams every single semester, and then it just ends up taking one person to be like, oh, by the way, this is the exam we had last year.
Yeah. It's like, well, no, and I saw that too. I remember when we were at a lot of the fraternities in Tallahassee would do that. They would keep they would have an exam bank.
Yep.
And then they would let you study from the old exams. And in many cases, the exact same. And they'd be the exact same test.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, that was great. Because I remember I was taking this economics class, and I had a friend of mine, oh, we have the questions for that. We have those exams. And I said,
like,
oh,
you
no, you don't. And he says, oh, well, if you want, would you like a copy of them? I'm like, okay. Is this legal? Oh, yeah, it's all legal. I'm like, you sure? So he gives me these study tests.
Yeah.
So I go in and take the test, and I'm like, exact same test. It's great. But a lot of the fraternities and a lot of the sororities do that because a lot of professors don't really care because they've been there long enough now and they've got tenure in these state universities. They can't. It's kind of like the Chevron doctrine, like the thing with Humphrey. They can't get fired no matter what they do.
I got to brag on Florida for a minute. This new article I got to cover about. We now have the most effective flesh-eating bacteria in the whole country now.
It's a terrible story.
Florida. Number one again in flesh-eating bacteria. I'm giving you a heads up, this ample warning. If you're down here in Florida and you're going to beaches or open waters, do not have any cuts or lacerations or any type of open wounds on your body or your person. This has become a serious issue. 8 dead and 32 sick down here in Florida between
eight
Florida
dead.
And Louisiana. Yeah. And what happens is now this bacteria, it's primarily a lot in the Gulf states out in basically the Gulf right now. And it's Vibrio vulsifius, and it's reported to be far worse in this state than it's ever been. And what it is it, if you have a cut or a wound, it starts decaying and rotting the flesh right around the wound that's trying to heal him. It's like scabbed up, this basically when you're trying to heal. And for some odd reason, that skin is very, very, very susceptible to this bacteria. The bacteria gets in this wound. It starts rotting the wound. The wound gets infected. Then the bacteria gets in the bloodstream. That's when it can kill you. And it starts causing severe issues, and it causes all types of problems. You start having basically nausea, start having diarrhea, start getting really sick. And the problem is a lot of people don't know they have it. And so they get to the hospital, and you're like, dude, you got this massive bacteria infection now. We got to put you on all these antibiotics, try to save your life. So be aware of this. It says 17% of the reported cases reported wounds and seawater exposure. So this is directly related to it. So I just want everybody heads up on that. Florida. Number one again in flesh-eating bacteria, as horrible as that is. So that being said, Florida's probably not the best place to come anymore. Nobody should come down here and visit. We're full.
Well, don't you remember just a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, when they opened up those locks coming out of Lake Okeechobee?
Yeah,
and they pumped all of that. Just
brackish water.
Oh, no, yeah. It wasn't even that. It was full of bacteria. They pumped it. It was like a giant green sludge.
Then how was that algae bloom? Uh-huh. The water exploded. I mean, it started taking over everything.
And so then you got to remember, they pumped Core Exit into the Gulf 14 years ago, and there's no telling what that stuff has done
or
what it's bred.
The issue is, Florida, nobody
Deep
wants to
Water Horizon.
This. Yeah, nobody wants to address this in Florida. We're an extremely diverse ecosystem. with Florida. We really are.
We were.
Now it's just becoming infected with everything. Between the Everglades and the ocean and the clean water and the aquifers, the springs, we've got all types of diverse ag in Florida, and it's an amazing state for that. The problem is it's very sensitive, and when you start pumping in certain waters from other areas that aren't supposed to be there, and you start pumping all these chemicals into certain areas, and you start having all these interactions, there's no idea what the side effects are going to be, and we've seen that now after the last 20, 30 years of really bizarre.
I remember when we were kids, if you had a cut or something and you went, went out to the Gulf in the salt water, it helped heal you up.
I've done it before. I've done it. You just skin, you got a scrape, you got a cut on it. Dude, next 2 days, it's like sealed up like that.
But remember, a lot of times you have sewage spills into the Gulf too.
Yeah.
From some of these major municipalities.
And what's happening is now, I think, because we're pushing 100, 105, 110 every day down here, what's doing is causing this bacteria to basically just explode with growth in the water.
Yeah, it's been really hot. The good news is when they park a high-pressure zone over us like they've done, which is all done intentionally, by the way, what it allows us to do is avoid low-pressure zones, which means that the hurricanes don't hit us.
Yeah.
We've had zero named storms so far that have hit Florida, even close to us this year.
We'll see if they'll start switching the game up next month on us.
Yeah, they can put. Yeah, they can direct and steer the storms. You guys already know that. By the way, we're gonna go back to Nazis again.
Nazis.
We're gonna call it fascism this time.
This is crazy, dude. This is gonna be a funny Monday show.
You know, University of Pennsylvania student papers. Now the school is caving to Trump's administration over men and women's sports, and it's fascism. So in other words, if a dude wants to go beat up a woman, and you say it's not cool, you're a fascist.
There you go. Makes total sense. Makes total sense.
We saw that last week with that lady who got knocked out up there in Cincinnati.
That was horrible.
The guy just cold cocked her. Now she got brain damage.
Well, no. Look what happened to doggone Olympics. Look at the Olympics last year. That guy's now been completely banned. He's got a Y chromosome. But he said, I was born a biological female. They're like, you have a Y chromosome. You're not born a biological female.
But he's got a gold medal.
Yeah, for beating up a woman.
The University of Pennsylvania student paper is very upset that the school agreed to Trump administration's demands regarding men's participation in women's sports. So much that it says that University of Pennsylvania is descending into fascism or Nazism, and they're all a bunch of neo-Nazi skinheads, I guess. Its headline, the Daily Pennsylvania Summer Edition editor Ingrid Holmquist, no comment, and her summer session cohort said their editorial is not about the Penn State's women's swim team and surrounding Leah Thomas controversy or the NCAA double guidelines as biological sex characteristics, except that it is. In allowing the federal government to make a decision that belongs to our community, Penn has violated our trust in a way that it may be impossible to restore, the editors write. Our administration could have said no, fighting in court to keep the government out of our athletic policies. In other words, if I want to have a man beat up a woman, it's my right to do that, and so you can't tell me I can't do it. If I want to have an XY chromosome come in and beat up somebody in a swim meet or whatever, it's okay because I like it so. And, of course, this girl's unbelievably overweight, and she's not very attractive. And so, therefore, she has to make sure that she gets her voice and her point out here. Furthermore, Penn made a deal with the administration that has proven hostile to human rights. And this agreement affirmed the belief for the university that Trump's actions were illegal and logical. Throughout history, authoritarian regimes have begun their crackdowns with an attack on universities. Some of that is true. Because of dissent and social progress, the editors continue, we can't ignore the warning signs. Penn's actions are exactly what it looks like to give the extortion guys as governance. Germany did this with the universities. They really did, you know, when they were coming in and they were promoting communist ideology and indoctrination. They did. They said, you can't do this. We're not going to allow you to come in and destroy the youth. Not to allow you to come in and destroy the culture. This happened back in the 30s. And so when she says that, she is correct. She's calling that. In fact, this is what happened with the Frankfurt School at Goethe University. Hitler came in and had this edict that everybody knew that if you were promoting certain communist ideologies, you were going to be taken out of power, out of position, and probably arrested. And so therefore, they fled to Switzerland, and then they came over to Columbia University and started this filth in the United States, and that's how it's worked its way through these Ivy League schools first and then to all the major university systems. So she is right. Governments have come in the past and tried to stop this, which is what they did in Germany. And, you know, the problem with that is that Germany was able to stop it for those 10, 15 years, but it came right back in. Germany is one of the most liberal countries in the world now and is filled with communists.
That's a fact.
This is why when I was passing on the right and that one guy, he was basically he had his little, you know, little badge on, a little communist badge on. I'm being facetious now, and says, you can't pass me. I'll drive as slow as I want in the left-hand lane, because he knew the law was in place, Austin, that it's like a $5,000 ticket if you have a German driver's license if you get caught.
Is it that big?
No, it's that big. And so he was going to make sure that I wasn't going to do it. And boy, when I went around him, I went around nice and slow, like, Make sure you can see me. And I waved at him. And he's flipping me off, screaming and yelling and cussing and rolling his window down at me. He was that angry.
Because what you're doing.
And that's exactly what's happening here. Somebody's pointed out that basically when men want to beat women up, there's, by the way, just thought I'd mention this, there's a reason there's a weight class in wrestling.
That's true.
I always say that to Austin. He'd, I'd be wrestling, he'd be little, you know, he'd be like 50 pounds, and I'd just pin him down. I'd say, this is why there's a weight class in wrestling. Yeah. Oh, this is not fair. I'm like, well, that's why there's a weight class in wrestling. That's why a 200-pound man doesn't fight a 120-pound woman in a ring. I know Hollywood has made this a joke. It really has. Oh, look at this little girl beating up the 6'6" guy that weighs 300 pounds. It doesn't happen unless she pulls out a 44 Magnum.
Shoot, 43X with hydro shocks. I still put somebody down pretty quick with right shot placement.
but the point, I said that, this, break this is the thing for a second. But the reality is that it just doesn't work like that in the real world. And so here they are. It doesn't work like that in the real world unless you get these liberal people on these college newspapers now writing stories about how fascism is taking over University of Pennsylvania.
That's true.
It's ludicrous, but I want to cover this story because, quite frankly, it's always the same thing. And, you know, and I covered this a minute ago, and I'm going to read this to you again. You ready? This is going to be great. So far, Sweeney's committed two cardinal sins. This is the girl who did the jeans commercial. The first is daring to be sexy and appealing in an American Eagle blue jeans ad. You see, Sweeney had the temerity to be normal, beautiful, not fat, not trans, not tattooed, and she's beautiful.
Not trans.
Because the group that have pushed this narrative is the same group that's pushing the narrative now in that school newspaper.
That's exactly right.
That's who's doing this. It's the communist infiltration into our university systems. And the sad part about it is they're saying, when you're godless, like the Soviet Union was, they're godless. The God is the state.
Oh, yeah.
Therefore, God doesn't make a man or a woman. He makes humans. And therefore, everybody is the same in their eyes. That's what it all boils back down to. And the closer you are to being a trans, the closer you are to their God, the snake in a tree called Ein Sof, which is at the peak of this with Kabbalah. All of this stuff is where this comes from.
Well, that's why Stalin had no respect for human life. I mean, the genocide that Stalin did on a regular basis was insane.
He was to the point that if they couldn't kill 15,000 people a day, he was upset.
Well, and that's the thing that's so crazy about it is that you read the history books, and there was by no means am I ever supporting or saying what a lot of stuff that Adolf Hitler did was okay. But it's wild to me how Adolf Hitler's always the one who's the boogeyman in World War II, and Stalin gets this gigantic pass where that man committed more genocide across the Soviet Union.
I remember Jim Rohn said that one time.
Yeah.
Remember that? He said, you know, Hitler killed 6 million people, if you believe that narrative, if you believe that. And he goes, but the reality is Stalin, we know, killed at least 50 million.
Right.
But because he was our ally.
Nobody talks about Stalin.
And he was a hardcore communist. That's why General Patton said, we need to rearm the German troops and get rid of Russia once and for all and stop this onslaught of communism. But the problem was, Stalin was a high-level Mason. Yep. Churchill was a high-level Mason. Truman was a high-level Mason. And they all got into the back room and decided on how they were going to divide up Europe, and they wanted to make sure they did what they wanted to do.
And let's just be real. One of the main reasons why Germany really got the first brunt of it was because Hitler came in and basically threw out the central bankers. And the whole thing that happened with this Weimar Republic and everything after that.
That's a fact. In fact,
Stalin didn't throw out the central bankers.
You know, because the central banker is the one who put him in power.
That's
and
exactly
you know what's interesting? One time I was at Yalaha's Bakery one time. I don't go there anymore because the principal who used to own the place has passed away, a good friend of mine. And I remember there was a guy there from Argentina.
Yeah.
And he knew where Hitler had been hanging out in Argentina.
He was legit?
Yeah. And he looked at me and he said, the last chance the world had to rid itself of the Kabbalist, Luciferian, synagogue, bankers was 1930s Germany. And I thought to myself, well, I can't say he's wrong.
Problem is Hitler lost it. He started doing way too much crap, especially when he's got way too much methamphetamine.
Tried not to sleep.
Yeah. I mean, when you start moving divisions around that aren't there, that are wiped out.
And plus, remember, he's a vegetarian. He probably had all kinds of B12 deficiencies.
Probably zinc deficiency, too.
Oh, yeah.
And then another reason was fine. Isn't that zinc deficiency is a serious problem now, and they're starting to look at it.
Here's a segue.
On sale. But there's an article coming from NIH. Role of zinc in the immune system, an anti-cancer defense mechanism.
It's critical.
This, and I'm not claiming this. This is on NIH with from PubMed. This is a gigantic research study they did going into detail. It says the human body cannot store zinc reserves, so deficiency can arise relatively quickly.
I didn't know that.
Through improper diet, yeah.
I didn't know it couldn't store.
Cannot store massive reserves. It says severe zinc deficiency is rare, but mild deficiencies are common. They're now showing the relationship between zinc content and diet and risk of cancer. The anti-cancer effect of zinc is most often associated with the antioxidant properties. However, this is one of the possibilities, including the influence of zinc on the immune system, transcription factors, cell differentiation, proliferation, DNA and RNA synthesis, repair, enzyme activation, and inhibition, the regulation of cellular signaling. This goes on. And so this is interesting. It says right here, cancer cells are characterized by uncontrolled division. Thus, paradoxically, by striving for immortality, they end the life of the human being much faster than the passage of time. I thought it was an interesting comment about cancer. It's basically saying that the cells start trying to have uncontrolled division. They kill the host. And then it goes into detail here on how zinc are the components and structural regulatory proteins, including transcription factors. Now, I'm not going to do this whole article. It's a long article, and it's got tons of references if you guys want to read it. But essentially, when you get down to the bottom phase of it here, all the way down to the conclusion, it goes into detail. And it goes. Basically says the data cited indicate that zinc is an essential trace mineral for the activation and structural stabilization of a great number of enzymes, as well as the immune system and antioxidant response, including mental health. Supplement and optimal intake of zinc restores the normal immune system response and reduces the risk of infection. This is why it's so important, if you're sick, why zinc works so well, and also, too, why it is such a required nutrient when you're trying to maintain overall health of the body.
You know, that's one of the reasons zinc was on our immune system protocol
still
during
is.
COVID.
Still is. Never changed it.
And now one
zinc,
more.
Zinc, D3, vitamin C.
Well, one more thing zinc does is zinc really, really helps to stimulate libido.
Oh, yeah.
And the sperm basically requires a large amount of zinc. And one of the reasons that a lot of men are impotent and can not have children is because of deficiency of zinc. And a lot of the reason that a lot of men have no libido is a deficiency of zinc. And we've seen this repeatedly over and over and over again. That's why I take 3 of our zinc every single day.
Oh, yeah. And it's in the prostate support, too. And we have a small dose in the Ultimate Multiple and the Ultimate Multiple Powder.
And I've learned over the years, there's a research that I've done, that it's one of the primary factors causing prostate damage and prostate health problems.
Zinc
is not having enough zinc. You know, so it's really important to get zinc in your diet every single day. Because, again, I thought the body could store better than this. But it says here it doesn't store.
This is a big study with NIH. And I want to, because like I said, you guys like when I bring a lot of stuff up. This isn't me saying this. This is me quoting what they talk about here. And you can look when you get down here. I mean, look at this. Look at these references. I mean, the references just go on and 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 on.
Now we're at over 50 already.
Yeah.
60. 70, 80, 90, 100.
Wow. So I'm saying, this isn't like, oh, by the way, we kind of looked at it, zinc might be good for you. This is a well-documented NIH study that goes into detail on the immune system and anti-cancer defensive mechanisms with zinc and the NIH. So again, I'll post this on the site. You guys can look at it. But another reason why we talk about zinc being such a required nutrient in the body, and like I said, I think a lot of times it's massively overlooked. Like, nobody really talks about it. It's not the cool vitamin, right? B vitamins are the cool vitamins.
Well, it's not the cool mineral, but here's what happens when you have zinc. If you have high enough sperm count of zinc, when the sperm and the egg get together,
right,
when they connect, there's actually a spark. I mean, a real spark, like an electrical discharge, and the intensity of that spark is based on one thing only: the amount of zinc in that sperm.
Yeah.
That's crazy, isn't it? I'm telling you, that's the truth. And so what's cool about that is that's why a lot of people who've had problems having children, they don't even look at the man to start with. They look at the woman. And in reality, a lot of the times, infertility is caused by the men having lowered zinc levels. Very important that we see that.
Well, and I'll cover this. I ran out of time. We're in the clock down. And tomorrow, there's more information on the FDA rubber stamp of this new fake salmon with no independent testing and no public review.
More Chevron crap.
Under the FDA. See, most lab-grown food is all regulated by the USDA. Seawater, basically fish, is not regulated by the USDA. It's regulated by the FDA when it comes to being lab-grown. The FDA came in, looked at this stuff, said, there's no testing, no public review. The only thing they have is from the company manufacturing, the company saying, it's safe and healthy like any other food is. So I'm going to get into more detail this tomorrow, as I talked about a couple months ago. But now they're talking about they're going to start using this in upscale restaurants, is basically selling this fish and not disclosing that it's lab grown.
That's awful.
That's horrible.
By the way, keep your hearts and minds in Christ. I got to pray for you guys yesterday again in church, which I always do. You guys are amazing to me. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening to the show. And thank you for kind of putting up with our antics every once in a while and not sending any too many letters. I still haven't got my email fixed. I'll get that done today.
Email fixed.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll get it done.
Appreciate you guys.
Love you guys.
If you need anything, Team Health Masters, 1-800-726-1834. Call us if you need anything. Team Health Masters with the zinc on sale. You guys have a fantastic evening. We'll talk to you again on this show tomorrow, as always, my friends.